Hi, I'm Bill Allman, President of the Adhesive and Sealant Council, and welcome to the latest edition of our monthly podcast. Each episode, we'll be discussing some of the biggest issues and trends affecting our industry and look at what this means to our membership. To make sure you don't miss out on future shows, hit the subscribe button. We hope you enjoy the program. In this episode, we will discuss the growing demand of ESG, environmental, social, and governance, on companies and corporations as part of a larger movement across industries to address sustainability. My guest today is Dr. Christopher White, Senior Managing Scientist at Exponent. For over 50 years, Exponent has provided engineering, scientific, environmental, and health consulting services to corporations, insurance carriers, government agencies, law firms, and individuals. The firm has been best known for analyzing accidents and failures to determine their causes, but in recent years, it has become more active in assisting clients with human health, environmental, engineering, and regulatory issues associated with new products or processes to help prevent problems in the future. Chris, welcome to Connected to the AAC podcast.
Bill, it's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You've been a frequent presenter at ASC events over the years on topics of great interest. And most recently, you were a wonderful presenter at the 10th World Adhesive and Sealant Conference. It was great to see you there, and it's great to have you again this morning.
Yeah, that was a great conference. The team did an excellent job putting that together.
Yeah, it was really good. Overall, it was a wonderful experience. Okay, so let's start our conversation today about ESG. So for our listeners, Chris, what is ESG? Where did it come from? Why is it here?
So ESG is a really interesting, you would think it's kind of a modern phenomenon, but it actually has its roots all the way back in the 1950s and 60s. So it turns out that as far back as 1950, there was a mine union that said that they wanted to support responsible investing and using their money. Essentially, ESG is the ability to capture non-financial rewards that companies put forward, their philosophy. How do they interact with their customers? How do they interact with their people? And how do they interact with their governments in their governance strategy? So it came out of kind of sustainability investing. How does the corporation interact? What are the values they have? And over time, it's just built up. There's some really interesting milestones that was in there. For example, in 2021, Larry Fink of BlackRock actually published his annual letter to the shareholders. And he had this really clear message that he said that corporations need to do more than just financial returns. They need to be good corporate citizens. That's essentially what's driving ESG. ESG stands for environmental, social, and governance. So the environmental is how does your corporation and how does your business, how does it interact with the environment? Social is essentially how does your organization behave toward its customers? How does it behave towards the people who work for it? And then governance is, do you have transparency in the governance issues that you have around there?
So Chris, it sounds like, you know, it may be on the surface applicable to larger companies, public, facing companies. Should smaller companies also be addressing ESG? Or is this more for publicly held companies?
I think that if you come back to I think it's going to be generally applicable to everyone, because what we're seeing is that it's not driven by regulatory in general, but it's really driven by a change in public perception. A large fraction of our customer base, a large fraction of the population is experiencing changes in the weather that they've never seen before. So there've been a large rise in extreme weather events. And as people see those extreme weather events, attribution studies say those are responsible, or they have a higher probability or a higher intensity due to man-made climate change. And when they see that, they think, how do I make a change? How do I get back to where we wanted to be? And so that changes their behavior. It changes their behavior in terms of what they want to buy, what they want to invest in, all of their attributes and how to make those changes. And because their attitudes are changing, that means that it's not just that you're responding to some regulation or some reporting requirement. You're essentially responding to the changing needs of your customer base, and that they're essentially going to put pressure on regulators to change what's going on there. So it's really about changing the nature of the business climate that we're interacting with.
You know, if you're setting out to develop an ESG strategy, where do you start? Companies can certainly consult with Exponent for you know, as an example. Where do they really begin to start a process of designing an ESG program?
Yeah, the problem is that there isn't a single answer to that question. There are lots and lots of different organizations that are essentially trying to understand how to come up with a metric to measure ESG. And in some sense, that's very difficult. But if you, because there's so much diversity in that space, there are a few that are becoming dominant, like the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, which is a relatively new one, but it's gained widespread traction and affinity. But you start with essentially, do you have a sustainability strategy for your organization? Do you have an understanding of that? Are you communicating it, and are you communicating it effectively? Because if you are doing that, then that essentially starts leading into these ideas of how do you report metrics and how do you make that happen? One of the developments that's just happened is that the Securities and Exchange Commission has just initiated a 60-day comment period on a proposed ruling that they have, where they're looking at all organizations that are under subject to regulation by the SEC will need to conform to something like the Task Force on Financial Disclosures. We'll see what happens to that, but that may become, if that becomes a rule, then that becomes essentially a mandatory reporting requirements on understanding how your organization will be affected by change or extreme weather events. How does that affect your ability to do business? What is the risk associated with weather exposure to your business?
And so when you develop an ESG program, it's not something that you develop once and then you leave it alone. It's something that's evergreen, that's something that needs to evolve continuously. Is that correct?
I think that that's a really great strategy, because I think, you know, the regulations and the requirements are changing on a fairly persistent basis. And I think that that's occurring up and down your spectrum. And it's going to be your customer base and responding to the needs and the changes of your customer base and what your customers are asking for, or their customers. Eventually, someone's really going to be concerned about that, and that fraction of your customer base that is concerned about ESG and ESG reporting, just as a way to measure what that is going to be increasing, and it's increasingly important to them. There was a study that was just published in The Lancet where they interviewed 10,000 people from 16 to 24 years old, you know, 1,000 people in 10 different countries across the world. And they said that fear of climate change and fear of climate anxiety actually affects their ability to function on a daily basis. Half of the people in that age group. And so as that cohort ages up and they become your new customers, they're going to be asking these hard questions to you and of your products and what's going on.
Yeah. And you talked a lot about the drivers for ESG, certainly from the customer side. If you're a public company, investors are also looking at this. Are the expectations and the demands from each of those two stakeholders, are they the same? Are they slightly different? Shed some light on that.
I think that there's kind of this general wave coming with your consumers, and that they're going to represent a spectrum. I mean, there's some people who are going to be, I'm never going to use plastic products ever again. And there's some people that say, you know, it would be nice if I do that. Think of the daily investment that most people make in their lives, is that we're required to sort our trash. We've been doing that since the 1970s. And now we're telling people, yes, you've been sorting your trash from the 1970s, but it doesn't really matter, because only 6% of it ever gets recycled. And that's going to generate anger and frustration. But it's, again, a distribution and a spectrum of what's going to happen. And how do those people respond, and how do they react? Are they going to put pressure on their regulators? Are they going to put pressure on you as a corporation? Are they going to put pressure on how that works. Specifically for companies like that are involved in the adhesive and sealant space, that's a really interesting place to be, because adhesives are also essentially part of an assembly of different products. Like, is it a label on a bottle? Does that label make the bottle more or less recyclable? Can we get to the point where that label can go away or be separated? Can we design for recycling? Can you incorporate post-consumer content in your processes? And how does that affect your ability to develop saleable products? Because you need stability in your processing line. And if the recycling stream is not stable enough, then you may end up with batch-to-batch variability. Do you have adhesives or sealants that are in contact with the skin or other places where you have that susceptibility to contaminants within the recycling stream? Those are going to be questions that as an organization and as you're looking at your products, that would be important to consider.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've talked about another important stakeholder, you know, in the adhesive and sealant industry and across industry, and that's regulators. And you know, we're starting to see more and more state governments introduce extended producer responsibility bills to address you know, some of the costs of recycling and reuse as a way for manufacturers and producers to take greater responsibility for the recycling, you know, the cost of that. In one of your presentations, I think it was at the World Adhesive and Sealant Conference, or it might have been the Leadership Conference that you also presented at last year for ASC. You talked about how extended producer responsibility and ESG intersect. Can you describe that a little bit for us once again?
Yeah, I think it comes back to this idea that the customers, I mean, if the customer walks outside, or if people walk outside and they see these extreme weather events, whether it's heat, fires, or, you know, floods, or they read about it, or those things, they say, how do I affect that? They're essentially going to put pressure on regulators. And so ESG is essentially kind of a corporate level response to that anxiety that they have. And that's, you know, when you go into the equities market, when you go in the debt market, you need an ESG rating for the company. But they're also very interested in how does that affect, you know, individual components that I buy. There was a concern about phthalates in plastic water bottles, and the customer demand changed essentially very quickly. There are concerns about individual components within sunscreens, and that changed the market. If you were in that market, you had to respond to that pretty quickly. So that kind of driving customer demand, and that they're essentially putting pressure on regulators and others, and just that also just on organizations by what they're buying and what they're selling. So that EPR laws are essentially a response to that as well, and that there are a large number of states that have them on the books or are considering them, and that the specific numbers are changing on a very regular basis, because the states are talking to each other about, wow, if I can take the cost of municipal recycling off of my books and put it onto somebody else's books, that's a great thing. And I'm going to be rewarded by the public to make that work. So you may have to end up, as an organization, you may end up reformulating. So microplastic beads were an example that were tremendously successful and did a great job. They just persisted in the environment. And when that was pointed out, essentially, first, companies had to reformulate because of customer demand, and then that was followed up by regulatory demands, and it was incorporated into regulations to make that work. So you had to eliminate that. So those EPR laws essentially are a reflection of the customer sentiment that I think is already out there. And so do we understand the changing responsibility and the changing roles of how do we think about the products that we produce? For a long time, people that produce plastics or adhesives or sealants thought about those as essentially kind of cradle to customer. And that we are responsible once we get it to the customer, then it becomes the customer's problem from then on. But this changing EPR laws and ESG laws essentially saying that your responsibility as an organization, as a producer of those materials, goes all the way cradle to cradle or cradle to grave, however we want to characterize that. And there are going to be financial responsibilities, but there's also going to be that way. And that's essentially going to, that's going to take a retraining of the kind of the formulators, because the formulators have said, deliver the best product you possibly can to the customer that meets their needs with the lowest possible cost. Use all the tools that are available to you, because that's what the customer really demands. But the customer is changing what they demand now. Now it's, can we deliver the product that barely meets the customer's needs, but has the ability to either be recycled or reclaimed or dissolved or disappear in some way? And we have to think about everything that we put into that incredibly sophisticated, high-performance plastic additive package or plastics solution that we have. I mean, the formulations are incredibly sophisticated. But now we have to start thinking about everything that we put in there, if it dissolves or if it recycles or whatever that is, can we do that by reducing the number of tools? And anything that we have to think about, anything that we put into a plastic product, adhesives or sealant, is that something that we'll be happy with if it ends up in our drinking water? And that's a new kind of thought that we haven't thought about before.
You know, one other stakeholder that we haven't mentioned are retailers. You know, quite a few of our industry's products are sold through retail. And some of the big box retailers like Lowe's or Home Depot, they have their own separate programs to encourage, you know, greener or safer or more environmentally conscious products on their shelves. If a company does ESG, for example, I mean, does that address some of their concerns to the extent that you're familiar with those programs, Chris, in the retail space? Do they intersect at all, or are they completely different?
No, that's a great question. If you think about like one of the tools that is being used to help us understand this is come out of the Environmental Protection Agency, and it's called the scope regulations. And there's scope 1, scope 2, and scope 3. And scope 1 says, do you understand the carbon footprint of your organization's manufacturing processes? Like how much energy does it take to keep the lights on? How much energy it takes to move things in and out? Scope 2 is essentially, do you understand all of your suppliers? And so what is the embodied carbon in all of the materials that come in to your facility to allow you to make the products that you're interested in? So you have to know all the way up and down the supply chain what's going on. And now what the regulations are asking for is scope 3. And scope 3 says, not only do you have to understand your energy and your energy balance and your carbon footprint and all of your suppliers and all of the energy associated with the inputs to your products, but now you have to understand all of the carbon associated with its use history, its disposal, and its renewal if it's recycled. And so understanding the entire carbon budget for a product from the beginning all the way to the end, whatever that beginning and the end is. And so if that product moves between several different organizations, each organization is going to be asking the previous organization, tell me what your carbon budget is and tell me how that works and tell me what's going on. There was an interesting story about metal door hardware, that there was a producer of metal door hardware that was essentially being locked out of markets because they didn't have that accounting for what their carbon budget was. And they're like, it's metal door hardware. It doesn't go away. It just stays there. But as soon as they develop the ability to say to their suppliers, to the people they're selling them to, here is our accountability of what our carbon budget is for that, they essentially were able to sell a lot more units. They were able to get back into those markets and make it happen. And that works. And the adhesive and sealant council did that exact thing by developing the EPR, the generic EPR for sealants. And that was essentially allows them to then generically move that product forward with an understanding of its known carbon budget. That was just a really, really smart move on ASC's part.
Yeah, I should also mention that Chris is a frequent presenter at the Adhesion Society's annual meeting each February. It's an outstanding organization and outstanding event that many participants from academia, the scientific community from which Chris belongs, and industry come together each year to talk about a lot of these issues. So I want to make sure I mention Chris's involvement with the Adhesion Society as well. Chris, any final thoughts? Anything that I didn't ask about regarding ESG that we should share with our listeners?
I just think it's really important that, you know, if you're not moving forward, if you're not thinking about sustainability and ESG, it's going to be a changing world, because there is essentially not a lot of movement on the federal level, or maybe the federal movement is lacking behind ESG and EPR regulations, that the individual states are stepping up and saying, okay, we're going to make that happen. We've already seen laws both on the East Coast and the West Coast, in Maine and Washington, California. And so it's going to make selling your product much more complicated, because instead of having a single regulation that you need to respond to, you're going to have to essentially have accounting in many different jurisdictions, maybe up to 50 or 60 different jurisdictions that for which you have to understand. So, you know, if you are selling an adhesive onto a label, onto a package, you're going to essentially have to have the accounting for each state that you're sending it into. And paying attention to your sustainability and paying attention to these regulatory and reporting requirements is going to be important in working towards, you know, helping us understand how to develop a national standard or those things. I think those are what's really important. But I'm just really excited that the ASC is thinking about this, and that they're really on top of it, and it's a great service to their members.
Well, Chris, we could not do this without your input and learning from you, as we do at our various conferences, as well as opportunities like this on our monthly podcast. So really, thank you for sharing your expertise. It was great to see you in Chicago a month ago. That was a lot of fun. And I know we will see you again at another ASC event. So again, thank you for your time today.
Thank you again. It was wonderful to talk to you, and you bet we're going to see you again shortly.
Yep. Thanks, Chris. That will do it for this episode of Connected to ASC. I want to, again, sincerely thank my guest today, Chris White of Exponent, and we'll see you next time. Thanks to all of you who tuned in. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. Make sure you like and follow us so you don't miss out on future shows. Bye for now.